ER101. In conjunction with the American College of Emergency Physicians, get the 411 on your 911. Here's your host, Dr. Lee Vinoker.
Hi, and welcome to ER 101. Well, this recent tragedy last week in Virginia with Senator Craig Deeds just brings to light something that ER doctors have been worried about for some time now. As the ER is our nation's safety net, healthcare safety net, we've been bearing the brunt of the shrinking resources for psychiatric patients for many years. My first guest is on to talk about it, Dr. Nathan Schlicker. He is the Associate Director of Team Health Patient Safety Organization. He's also served as a Washington State Senator, and he's on the Board of Directors of the Washington Chapter of the American College of Emergency Physicians. Welcome, Dr. Schlicker. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Lee, for having me and for covering this critical topic.
Yeah, it's just something I was amazed when I first started practicing about the procedures. Because, you know, even I worked at a trauma center. We had a big psych crisis, but we had psych residents and beds. And I hate to admit that it's 15, more than maybe around 15 years ago that I was graduated and practicing, so maybe there were even a few more beds and things. But let's first talk about why, you know, this is happening and the problem that we're seeing in the ER, because we can keep patients sometimes, you know, hours is the least of it, right? If they're there for half a shift or a full day, that's pretty good. I've seen patients for several days sitting in the ER trying to get a psychiatric bed.
Indeed. You know, we've had patients wait over a week to try to find an inpatient bed. And it is it's a multifactorial issue. But the reality is that a lot of it is the declining resources. Many states have cut their resources, cut inpatient beds. There have been struggles, to provide care. Many hospitals have moved away from providing inpatient psychiatric services, whether it be due to safety or profit concerns or other issues about availability of providing that in the community. And so we're really seeing a struggle to get patients the resources they need. You add on to that an aging population with more, you know, geriatric psychiatric issues, as well as many of our veterans that are returning with, psychiatric needs as well. And you've got a perfect storm of a crisis where our needs are dramatically outpacing our resources.
Yeah, it's interesting. And you use the term a perfect storm, and I think I've written about that too. And that's exactly it. I mean, I understand the last several decades, there's been this kind of deinstitutionalizing of mental health, right? Because, you know, there was an era where people looked back in the 50s and 60s and said, wow, what was happening in, to use a lay term, mental hospitals, right? But in these big psychiatric institutions, I mean, they had a lot of bad press in the 50s, the 60s, and do you think that was kind of part of it? It was this idea, you know, people were locked away and, you know, terrible things might have been going on. You know, we don't know for sure. I'm certain Hollywood made use of that. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and such. But so that was kind of part of the shift towards getting people out of institutions, you think?
I think there was definitely a component of that, and I think there was a need there. Institutions are not the only way, but the challenge we have is that now we've moved so far away from that. We've lost so many of those resources, and as institutions have stepped out, if they're state-run, and our state has two of them as well here in Washington, we've also seen hospitals step out. You add on to that the fact that we've taken folks and we've also reduced sometimes outpatient services. And so when people come in and they're in crisis and they may have challenges with schizophrenia or dementia or other issues that prevent them from self-accessing resources beyond just coming to the ER, or let's be honest, in many cases being brought in by the police or by EMS into our department, they're struggling with the ability to get access to resources by themselves, and sometimes they're being told, well, here's a piece of paper to follow up in 3 days. And the reality is, how well is that probably going to work? We can both agree it's probably not going to work well.
Right. And, you know, I think that you raise a good point. So once you've moved away and deinstitutionalized things, then automatically, you know, there's less need for the staffing. So then there becomes a workforce shortage, right? We can't find people don't go into those areas. You know, they don't become psychiatric nurses. They don't do this because there aren't places for them. So, you know, it causes a problem when you try and then ramp up or staff things too.
Well, and you add on to that the cost. You know, we've in Washington had this repetitive cycle of decreasing institutional beds, and we've seen it over the years. And we've had intermittent crises that have paused that decline. We had one where a fire chief was stabbed out front of our local sports stadium in the 90s and by a psychiatric patient, and that led to an arrest and that decline. We've again had some more tragedies recently, this Virginia example, another poignant example. But, you know, having served this last year in the Washington State Senate, and you know, when we look at trying to expand inpatient beds, the cost is amazing. In Washington, it's estimated that every inpatient bed in one of our two-state mental institutions costs upwards of $180,000 per bed. Wow. And so when states are struggling with resources, it's a real challenge.
So, and that's probably a couple-fold. I mean, I assume that the cost is high because it requires a lot of staff to be around. It's, you know, people have to be watched and monitored, and you talk about locked wards, right? So that contributes to the cost. But also the fact that, how about the majority of people with mental health issues? You know, we talk about how many people homeless on the street are that way because of mental health issues. So they're kind of like this group of people with no voice, no advocacy, no insurance. Is that part of the brunt of the cost for states and the federal government?
Well, I think that's a big reality that we need to come to, is that we have right now this silo problem in our government where it's not on the state's budget because they're not an institution. It's not on the county's budget because they're not in the local jail. We actually had one of our counties recently release a memo to all the local ERs saying they would no longer arrest nonviolent mental health patients. They would just bring them to the ER. So if they committed a crime, they graffitied something or they keyed your car, they're not going to get arrested for it. They're just going to be brought to the ER as though we're going to fix it. And, you know, and so it was not in their budget. And then we turn around and we say, well, it's not in somebody else's budget. The reality is that this population does cost us all. It's not good for them in terms of care. And we need to take a holistic approach to it that says housing is an issue, criminal justice is an issue here, interface with the mental health system is an issue, drug and alcohol treatment, again, many dual diagnoses in these populations. So there's a real challenge here that we need to all recognize, and we need to all see that it does cost us something, and until we step in and we start working on it, I think, unfortunately, these types of tragedies are all too frequent.
Yeah, and the other problem, I think, too, you know, even when you talk about people that are insured and the private sector of insurance, there's been shrinking dollars allocated to that, too. So even if you have insurance now, I know the Affordable Care Act is going to attempt to cause parity, because if you think of it, a mental illness is an illness. Why should it be covered less for any, you know, crisis problem than anything else? And yet, there isn't a parity in it, and that's only part of it. So there's the uninsured, and then the people that are underinsured, even when they have insurance. We'll talk about that in the next segment. This is ER 101. I'm Dr. Levin Oker on Radio MD. Stay well. And